Article 43, and I'm reading from the 1914 version. What you have is the 1618. At the close of the classical and other major assemblies, censure shall be exercised over those who, in the meeting, have done something worthy of punishment, or who have scorned the admonition of the minor assemblies. This article speaks about, first of all, the way people deport themselves at the meetings themselves. It doesn't appear from the history of this article that this necessarily has to do with the delegates, although, you know, it is a quaint expression that the chairman is to silence the captious, which means if there are delegates who get out of hand during a meeting, the chairman does have that prerogative to you know, make sure that things are done decently and in order. But the understanding here, for the most part, is people who are at the meeting, attending the meeting, and particularly those who have business, you know, them being an object of the meeting's discussion. So, discipline cases or other sorts of things. So, you know, the idea is everything is to be done decently and in order, and if someone at the who's been censored by either a consistory or by a classis has resisted that, then synod has the opportunity to speak to those persons. The way it translates in our days most commonly is this is the place where discipline cases get settled, where permission is given to elders to continue to the second and third steps of discipline. So, you know, church councils don't have that authority themselves. So it's quite interesting how, you know, apparently there were, if you look back in the minutes, not so much of the Synod of Dort, although there was a time when it was a Bogerman who was the chairman of the Synod of Dort, basically told the remonstrants they have to either stop doing what they're doing or have to leave. And because that's where the whole Arminian controversy was dealt with, and they were using delaying tactics and all kinds of other things to make the meetings go on and on, and finally the chairman says you have to cease or you have to leave. So that's, you know, I've never heard Article 43 invoked, thankfully. The meetings have been blessed with unity and peace, but this just shows that it can be otherwise at times, and we have to thank the Lord that it's not so. Article 44, more to the point these days, the classis shall authorize at least two of her oldest, most experienced, and most competent ministers to visit all the churches once a year and to take heed whether the minister and consistory faithfully perform the duties of their office, adhere to sound doctrine, observe in all things the adopted order, and properly promote as much as lies in them through word and deed the upbuilding of the congregation, in particular of the youth, to the end that they may in time fraternally admonish those who have in anything been negligent, and may by their advice and assistance help direct all things unto the peace, upbuilding, and greatest profit of the churches. And each classis may continue these visits in service as long as it sees fit, except for the visitors themselves request to be released for reasons of which classis shall judge. We've changed this somewhat in practice, although we've maintained it in principle. This would be the practice of church visitation, which we've all experienced here. Instead of, it used to be that the classis would take, like it says here, the more experienced and generally the older ministers who presumably were wiser and had more experience, and they would go from church to church in a classis. Now, what we do, we've assigned each minister and one of the elders or whatever elder that particular consistory picks to be over another church in this respect. Typically, it's the moderator, and one of his elders visits the church to which they're assigned and conducts the family visitation. You've seen the questions. We've sent around the revised version of those questions. It was revised a couple of years ago and approved at classis, and it basically covers what you see in here and a whole lot of other things. And the idea is this is just another layer of accountability for which we're very thankful in informed church circles. We are not independent congregations in the strictest sense of the word, but we are accountable congregations. Even though we may have local autonomy, we still are responsible to give an account of what we're doing here. Mm-hmm. Now, I should mention a couple of things just for your note, since I am leaving, God willing, and that is, whenever you schedule a church visitation, keep in mind that there needs to be an invitation placed in the bulletin 2 weeks for the two Sundays prior to the date of the visitation, that if any of the members want to meet with any of the visitants, they may schedule an appointment. They just can't like come in like today and sit in on the church visitation meeting. But they can schedule an appointment through the consistory. They can't contact the visitors directly. Now, it's also important to understand that whatever they want to speak about shouldn't be a matter that should have come before the consistory first. So in other words, if they've got a beef with something the consistory is doing, they can't just schedule an appointment to visitors if they haven't talked to the consistory first, to the church council first. So you need to exercise care that when somebody calls for an appointment, you just remind them of that. You know, just make sure this isn't a matter of like Matthew 18, where you're supposed to be dealing with a brother in Christ or with the consistory itself or the council itself without having dealt with them first. Now, they can ask advice about other kinds of issues that might be unrelated. So that opportunity needs to be afforded them, but also it needs to be carefully managed.
How often is that done?
We try to do church visitations every couple of years, 18 months to 24 months, typically. So we've had our last one, I believe it was January 2012. So we would be doing about, you know, by this, you know, next year, January or so. So, and that is something that you want to keep in mind.
Can I ask a question?
Of course.
Article 42?
Yeah.
When I was at the Senate last year, it says that they may send more than one minister. Does that mean that if they send more than one minister, they can't send an elder? Or
no, they always send an elder and a minister as a delegate.
You guys as church, and that's why I'm asking this question, Pastor, the young...
DeVries?
Kuivenhove. Oh. He didn't seem to be, he was part of the Senate, he was there, but it seemed like he didn't vote, so they don't have no voting.
No, an elder and a minister would be your primary delegates, primus, and then all the other ministers are automatically advisory.
Okay.
So you could have as many as you have come, but only two have vote. Otherwise, you'd end up, you know, basically stacking the deck, so to speak.
Yeah.
And I remember some of the early conversations at some of the earlier synods, you know, hints being dropped, well, we represent half of the population of the denomination. We're like, so what? You know, that doesn't count.
And that's why I'm asking that, because it says and have a vote, but I guess they don't have a vote.
Only the delegates.
Okay.
And that's why we have the form, you know, primus and secundus, so that we know who the voting people are.
Okay.
They've been deputed by the consistory, so.
Okay.
Good. Any other questions? Okay, Article 45, pretty straightforward. It shall be the duty of the church in which the classis and likewise the particular or general synod meets to furnish the following meeting with the minutes of the proceeding. We've bent this one just a tad. Because of the size and complexity of these meetings, we now have two synod clerks. Actually three. One of them does all the preparatory work. That would be, at this time, Pastor Overbeek, puts together all the reports, the agendas, solicits information, all that stuff, and sends that out. Then his work is finished when classis or synod sits. Then we also have, right now, it's Neil Dendecker. He is the minutes clerk. He is the one who puts together, you know, takes notes of all the decisions and proceedings, So he would be the second person who fulfills this obligation. He, however, is not a delegate to synod. That's his particular function. So synod also elects a secretary who is one of the four motoramen. Motoramen simply means officers of synod. So you have the chairman of synod, the vice chairman, the secretary, and then the treasurer. The treasurer is usually a deacon from the church in which the synod meets. So the secretary's job is to make sure that the minutes that the minutes clerk take are accurate, make sure that the wording is what it should be, and sends out a summary of those minutes for the banner, and works with the motoramen on the pulpit announcement too. So, you know, this isn't quite followed the way it reads here. Any questions?
The clerk also writes formal letters on behalf.
Right.
So it reminds the committees and
yes.
appointments.
He sure does.
Well, I got a letter, remember, and I still have to follow up on some of that.
Okay, good. Yeah, I had the particular privilege of being the
clerk this year.
Yeah, several times actually. They seem to.
You're just a good minutes taker.
Right. Just as soon as you start writing well, just get your head yes. the more.
We have other very gifted men who.
Do we?
Yes, we do.